Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 7th, 2018, a rather important day all around. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. And we're also joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, the indisputable maven of all things climate, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess the other thing is the battle goes on. I mean, despite D.R.'s pessimism, right, there's going to be another chance. You have to find another way. You can't walk away from the battle. And in 2 years, there's going to be another election. And the question is, how do we approach that one? Is it, did you guys see the thing in the Globe where, so Mr. DeLeo is the Speaker of the House, right?
Mm-hmm.
And two MIT graduate students put a ballot question on in his district asking him to support the Global Warming Solutions Act, right? And to have an energy plan. So it's basically tweaking DeLeo by putting in this local advisory question in his district because he's running unopposed. So, you know, he doesn't have to do anything. But the district, by 60%, passed the recommendation that he support clean energy initiatives and the 2030 Global Warming Solutions Act commitment, which I thought was, I guess what it comes back to is whether or not it's money or people that will sway the political class, the people in office.
Right? Or the wording of the question.
Or the wording of the question.
Good point.
I mean, even the passion of the NRA is mostly driven by money, right? Everyone gets a bumper sticker and a badge and a hat, and you feel like you've got your decoder ring out of the box of Cheerios, right? You're part of the team. And maybe that's a climate strategy somehow to, I don't know, build camaraderie. But I guess the flip side is we didn't do – so this is the trap. We're falling into the trap that somehow say everything went bad on Tuesday. Everything did not go bad on Tuesday. We took the House back. The Democrats, despite the overwhelming gerrymandering by the conservative side of the aisle, we took back the House. And, okay, where are we going to go with that? So one of the – as I said before, the House Science Committee is going to become run by actual scientists now. But the talk that I saw – I heard on the radio was that the Nancy Pelosi will discuss with President Star, Mr. Trump, about an infrastructure bill. And so the question was, from a climate perspective, should we be out rallying our local representatives our representatives to Congress to include smart grid upgrades, high power lines from North Dakota to everywhere in the country, all that kind of green infrastructure. And could you include in an infrastructure bill home energy upgrades, right? If the federal government was handing out money to upgrade the insulation in people's homes as part of an infrastructure move, that would be a good thing. And the flip side is, if the infrastructure is just building more highways, that's a bad thing, wouldn't you say?
I would think so. I think the old ideas that you just go as boldly as possible in terms of legislation. Obviously, things will be sort of pulled out in committees, but just fight as hard as you can for it. I believe that in the New York Times, it was reported that Pelosi said that she is going to try to bring back there was a House Select Committee on energy independence and global warming that existed the last time Pelosi was House Speaker, and it was completely destroyed by John Boehner when he became Speaker of the House. And that House Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming formed the framework and the foundation for what became the Waxman-Markey bill. Uh-huh. So it will be interesting to see if this committee is formed and if there is a changing of the guard in the U.S. Senate and in the White House in 2020. Could that lead to another shot at federal climate legislation, or will there be, as has been speculated, once again climate legislation being put on the back burner in favor of more of a push towards Medicare for all as being the priority for Congress in 2021 and 2022.
Well, I guess I got a question for you, which is related, is that if the Democrats have the House, should they do the moral equivalent of what the Republicans had done by voting for 107 times to take back Obamacare, right? They voted on that again and again and again. Question is there symbolic, is there value in voting for legislation that is in some sense symbolic, right? Mm-hmm. But say, this is, you know, Mr. Voter, this or Ms. Voter, this is what you get if you elect a Democratic Senate. Look, we've passed this bill. We've proven that everyone will vote for it in the House, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can do that and do that on several different fronts, even though you know it's not going to get through the Senate, you've still built the coalition. You've passed it once. It takes years. We had Senator Mark Pacheco right on this podcast. I mean, he was introducing similar bills year after year after year, trying to push them through. And I think it seems to me that that is a good strategy, not your only strategy, but a good strategy to pass bills that are shining examples of what you would do if you could. I mean, my feeling is that Wolf Blitzer would be asking you, oh, how can you do this, waste time, if you know it's not going to pass? And I think the Democratic side is mesmerized by the idea that we must succeed in this session or else it's not worth trying, whereas the other guys, they take symbolic votes all the time, right?
Hey, I'd say go for it, because look at how many times they symbolically passed bills to try to roll back light bulb standards. You know, they knew
and
that.
I think this time
they're
going to get it right. I just hope they take Ryan Zinke into the Interior Committee and have a little oversight of him, and we'll find out what Ryan Zinke's been up to lately. That would be an interesting day. I hope it's public and. I'll buy the popcorn.
He'll get a gig on Fox, but by the first quarter of next year.
Oh yeah, no, I mean he's gonna have food on the table for the rest of his life. But maybe we can get him out of, selling elephant rhino horns out of his basement. So I don't know. So I know. Up and up, there is. It's better to have the House in Democratic hands because there's an oversight. So, dear listener, this is now recent news that broke today. Let's just jump to that. I mean, Mr. Sessions has been asked to resign, right? I mean, that's a climate issue in the sense that, man, if the government's not working, you're not going to get anywhere, right? And it looks as if Trump is gearing up to what do they call it, a slow motion Saturday Night Massacre. I don't know. What the, did you either of you guys see any comment on that, or are you guys just kind of wisely remain quiet on the whole Sessions thing?
No, I'm nervous.
Yeah, man.
It'll be the Saturday Night Massacre crossed with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Here in Massachusetts, Governor Baker won re-election. I saw an article in the Globe saying that many of the green groups in Massachusetts gave him a pass because they thought Jay Gonzalez was not going to make it, and so they wanted to be able to make nice with the governor after the fact. I don't know. Either of you guys see that, Dion? Did you see that report?
Yes, I saw that.
Really? Is that what we did?
I was thinking in terms of... I think what happened in the case of I think ELM was the main group that decided to remain neutral, and I think what happened was that as Irving Kristol famously said, you can't beat a horse with no horse, and I think the decision of the groups that decided to remain neutral was that the only shot there was of making Baker a one-term governor was if the Democratic nominee was a box office star, so to speak. If you go back 6 years to what happened with Scott Brown, how the Democratic Party got a box office star at Elizabeth Warren, Harvard Law. You know, she had media presence going all the way back to the 90s. And jumping back 8 years ago, twelve years ago, you had another box office draw with Deval Patrick, who had also Harvard Law, one of the most accomplished attorneys in the country, ran the Civil Rights Division in the Justice Department. And I think that the groups that remain neutral figured that if the Democratic nominee wasn't a box office draw, wasn't a main eventer, it wasn't happening, so therefore, let's not tick off the incumbent. And I think that was simply their reasoning, nothing more, nothing less.
Right. I guess the question is whether or not, I mean, Jay Gonzalez did not come out as a strong climate hawk in the primary season. Towards the end of the campaign, he was much more adamant. It's not clear to me, you know, how much. Yeah, the whole episode. That's I mean, anybody listening who has an opinion about the way the Democratic campaign for governor went and whether or not it was we surrendered last summer. I don't know. But,
I mean, from what I heard, there was like no money put toward his campaign whatsoever, right? Like the Democratic committee didn't do anything to help him get elected. They have it's like they had better fish, bigger fish to fry or something.
Yeah. A friend of mine compared it to a UFC fight in which one of the fighters taps out during the introductions.
I don't know. I mean, I guess one good. Well, then there's some mixed news that I saw from up in Maine. Anyone listening to this podcast, you're gonna have to find your own links. I don't think I can dig all these links up for show notes. But the up in Maine, I guess Governor LePage, who's a bit of a kook. Is leaving the state. He's going to go down and live in Florida now. They've elected a climate hawk who's going to open up the coast of Maine to wind development, right? And probably bring Maine into Medicare, which is a good thing as well. We should applaud both things. But at the same time, there was a report that I saw that said the transmission line. Remember, we went through the big thing with Northern Pass last spring, right? And it was that the transmission line through Maine was a lock, and that's how we were going to get the Hydro-Quebec power into Massachusetts. So anyone who's forgotten, underneath the Global Warming Solutions Act, we in Massachusetts expect to get a lot of what's called green power, so-called green power from Hydro-Quebec, which is a set of dams up in Canada. But the question of getting that power down here into Massachusetts is the big question. And there were two proposals, one to bring it down on high-tension lines through New Hampshire, and then that got rejected for various reasons. And the second one was going to come through Maine to bring the Hydro-Quebec power into Massachusetts. And now that one in Maine is in trouble. And I guess it comes back to the original point I think the three of us made when the Northern Pass, New Hampshire route got junked, is that we should be building all this stuff in Massachusetts. We should be sinking all of our money into building homegrown wind turbines and solar panels right here and not have to rely on building. I mean, the people in Maine say, why should they have an ugly transmission line so that Massachusetts can feel noble about their energy consumption? Yeah, that's an interesting point, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know. Well, that, let's say, we probably ought to put it down there. Any other interesting commentary from the week? I mean, sum up where you are, where we're going to go. No? DR, you always got something. Where do you want to? Where are we going next?
I was thinking, I think there are a couple of the gubernatorial races. I believe Michigan and I want to say Nevada, but I may be wrong, but there are at least a couple of governors who were elected on and vowed to push their states towards 100% clean energy, very really? Similar to Jerry Brown's efforts to try to have his state be 100% clean energy by 2045. Uh-huh. So that's a potentially hopeful development because, again, you know, these brawls are going to be in the states, at least in the near term. Right. And again, it just goes back to that issue of is there going to be the support when the legacy energy interests try to bombard the airwaves with these paranoid rantings about how your energy bills are going to go through the roof. I don't know if you picked up that report because it was reported in either Grist or one of the other publications that some of the fossil fuel interests were actually micro targeting Hispanic voters in Washington State specifically to scare them to target working class Hispanic voters and to say your energy bills will go through the roof if 1631 passes, and that supposedly that the angle was to break down the diverse coalition of communities of color supporting 1631. I mean, again, you have to have some sort of financial way to counter that sort of stuff, because that's sick, deep, deep psychological micro targeting. That's just a new level of maliciousness that you have to have financial resources to counteract, or else you will just keep losing and losing and losing.
So the first was, I read this thing about, I think this actually was from a couple weeks ago, but the caravan of people moving, right? There's the whole thing about the caravan, and it's actually being attributed to climate change, right? That there's really, sure, they're moving due to violence and so on and so forth, but it's all sort of predicated on food insecurity, which is because of climate change, right? They can't, the cropland is failing and it's causing food insecurity, and then there's more violence and that's causing people to flee. Mm-hmm. And of course that's going to increase over time. And that doesn't have anything to do with, you know, sort of the voting issue, but I thought.
But I mean, I think I saw something similar, and it was saying this is a foreshadowing of where Trump would go, but a place that you don't want your country to go of fighting with refugees and immigrants, or treating them as such xenophobia, because this is a test case, right? This is, as you say, I think it's driven by, ultimately by climate issues, back if you rewind far enough. And then this gets into the whole Dave Roberts thing about proximate and distal causes, right? The proximate cause is there's gang violence in Venezuela or Honduras, and the distal cause is that there's climate change driving everyone into the cities looking for work. I think that's something, and I guarantee you it is an election issue, because dollars to donuts, Donald Trump has already forgotten about the caravan because it served its purpose, right?
And so is the media.
Yeah, so it's the media,
so
right?
The media.
You're not going to see
that.
Another thing
it's like,
about it.
It was like Ebola the day after the 2014 midterms. Didn't hear about it at all.
Boom, it's gone. and it's just, it's so shows the hypocrisy of the people that we are dealing with. So there's another rant. Oh, okay, I'll put that down. I won't even get going on that one. But I agree with you, Mariah. That the connection of the caravan to climate is an important one.
Yeah. And then the other thing was that there was a woman named Ruth Gates, who I think you guys both saw Chasing Coral. I know I definitely saw the movie Chasing Coral, you know, James Balog and a couple of folks worked on that. And this woman, Ruth Gates, was in the movie, and she was the one who I found her. She was really compelling because she sort of personalized coral reefs, you know. Anthropomorphized the coral reefs, and she was so enthusiastic and excited about these corals and had these beautiful, stunning images of them under the microscope that she had. Well, she died recently due to complications from surgery, which of course is really sad.
Yeah.
But the work that she's doing, could be something that saves our coral reefs. And I do hope that there are enough people who were working underneath her and who have been trained by her to continue it. But she's making basically these super corals where she's sort of taking the two. She's funny when she talked about it. She's like, she said they would take the corals out of the reef and they would train them like in a gym. And she's like, and then just like, you know, humans, when you're in a gym and you see someone else who's a fine specimen, and then you end up creating these superpowers, you know, super strong offspring. And she said that's kind of what they're doing.
That was Olivia Newton-John kind of thing, wasn't it? Physical.
So she's, you know, they would take the two strongest corals and then breed them and make these super corals that were very resilient to some of the climate change conditions and reseed a lot of these reefs. And that could be one of the most important things, talking about food insecurity. If you don't save the coral reefs, you're going to have a lot of folks who depend on the oceans for their food sources and their livelihoods. Without the coral reefs, their livelihood is gone. And so, I hope her work continues, and I'm happy that she has done so much for it, and sad to have lost such a pivotal, important person. But
Yeah.
So another plug to go see Chasing Coral. world too, because it's just an excellent, excellent movie. And I guess she did a, she was on the they have a little piece where she talks about sort of the jigsaw puzzle of life. I don't know if you guys have seen that. I have not.
Which one was the piece?
Vice, HBO's series.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. The news Vice on, yeah, we see it on HBO. Little newscasts, right?
I know.
Yeah.
I still can't believe, speaking of Vice, how sad it is that, that for all, as great as, you know, the HBO, they've done shows on climate and as great those shows have been, how sad is it that the same guy who helped to create Vice, the magazine, is that same idiot running around who created the Proud Boys stuff? How sad is that? Yeah, Gavin McGinnis. It's the same guy who, he was one of the co-founders of Vice.
And now he's...
What the hell happened to him?
Yeah. Wow.
And now he's running around doing this Fight Club crap. I mean, jeez.
I think it's called...
What happens to people?
I mean, if he had a Middle Eastern...
It's like Kanye West.
If he had a Middle Eastern last name, we'd be talking about radicalization and the subtle forces that turn people crazy, right? We'd have a task force and spend $20 million to address it. But since he's sounds like a nice white boy from the suburbs, it's okay with the crazy stuff he does. Well, I think that the take-home lesson for me is that we've just turned a page. As one tweet I saw said, this election, every election is a comma and not a period. Right. This is the latest phrase. We have 2 years to work on clean energy and good things with the House of Representatives, and during that 2 years to build the coalition of people that will allow us to get the Senate back and the White House. Those are things that we just need to start getting ready now. In 2 years from now, there's going to be another election. Your pessimism notwithstanding, dear, we're going to have to get out there and fight the effect of big money, find ways to do it. I'm sure that there's ways to do it. We just got to commit to that path. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So look, what we'll do is we'll put up, if I can dig up some of the links to stuff we talked about, I'll put them in the show. That'll be at massclimateaction.org/Facebook. You can check out the show on, I'm sorry, not Facebook, /blog, massclimateaction.org/blog. The Facebook page is /massclimateaction. You can listen to us on all the usual outlets. And so we'll close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions. We accept responsibility for building a durable future and believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. We must prepare for the 2020 elections and put the United States on a good course. And also, that includes a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
I want you to say that again with a big smile, Mariah. Smile and say thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You smile and say thank you. I'm going to smile and say thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.